Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. No, it really is a live program. It is 7 past the hour on the... Well, what's the date today? 27th? Is today the 27th? 26th? everything gets jibbity-jibbity, and we just totally lose track when there's a holiday on a Tuesday that feels like really a Monday, or feels like a Sunday, and the day before feels like a Saturday, so that when you roll around to Wednesday, it feels like... never mind. We had a great time. Hope you did, too. Molly came down Christmas morning and looked in the living room and looked over the fireplace and turned around and looked at Kathy and she said, "He did come. Santa did come. He filled my stocking." We almost peeled her off the ceiling from all the sugar she's had over the past 3 days. Oh, my God, are we going to have to purge this kid's system? Anyway, it was a great time, and what the hell, you're only 3 and a half once, right? I guess that's the excuse that we use. So, we have kind of a potpourri of topics for you tonight with the holiday season the way it is in this country and the way news media are really there to entertain and to make you forget. They're not there to inform or help any of us make decisions. Since that's the case... Now, when I say media, I'm talking about television. Since that's the case, television spends its time in the holiday dog days like this, waiting till after the first of the year and Congress comes back and the murderous Bush crime family gets back in full sway. They spend their time leading all their newscasts with lion attacks in the San Francisco Zoo, which obviously is a tragedy for the three people that were attacked, or a tiger, three people attacked, the one person who's dead. Three young men attacked. But as far as the lead story all day long and on most newscasts, I don't know. We've got a much more serious lead story than a tiger attack on three people at a zoo. This comes from Los Angeles. A man in a Santa hat was arrested a couple of nights ago and charged with drunk driving after he was spotted outside Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood wearing a wig, a red lace camisole, and a purple G-string. The deputy chief in L.A. said, "We're pretty sure this is not Santa Claus." He was booked into jail after his blood alcohol level measured just above the state's legal limit. Later, he was released on $5,000 bail. The man, who's 6 feet 4 inches tall and weighs 280 pounds, also wore black leg warmers and black shoes, and a red lace camisole and a purple G-string. So if you want stupid stories about tiger attacks, go somewhere else. If you want the serious stuff that's being put out there on the Associated Press wire, come here. And that story just makes me wonder if anyone's seen Larry Craig lately. Not that he's 6'4 and weighs 280, but you never know. This is from John. He writes, "Mike, thanks for the sanity. Here's what I had to endure this Christmas. My father-in-law told me Fox News was the only fair and balanced news out there. My mother-in-law said we had to go to war in Iraq because of 9/11. My father-in-law's father told a few racist jokes. Another relative, who is retired from the Air Force and never met a war he didn't like, said that they did find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but the liberal media won't report it. This is why we are doomed," John writes. "The Orwellian propaganda is too much for the average blank out there." I almost said that word. "For the average blank out there wandering around the shopping malls. And these sheep are America. I wish there was somewhere to go. Peace, John." Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm kind of lucky. I don't have people in my family who are that way. They're all dead, is the truth. Well, no, as a matter of fact, the one right-winger in my family is still alive and kicking. He's the physicist, the one, and I don't understand his attitude, but he's the one who worked not just on the guidance system for the MX missile back in the Reagan days, but he also worked on... I don't know, something to do with the Hubble telescope. So, and he was a charter member of PETA. He's a confirmed vegan, And yet he's a right-wing crazy. Go figure. Speaking of all that, Russia's military. This is how the Bush crime family has moved us forward from those battle Cold War days. Remember when the wall came down after Gorbachev did perestroika and glasnost and realized that it was pointless to try to continue to politically and militarily dominate seven or eight countries in Eastern Europe. After it had nothing to do with Reagan, had everything to do with a man named Mikhail Gorbachev, who realized that the end of the Soviet Union was at hand and acted accordingly. And when several Eastern European countries decided it was time to make a break, Gorbachev sat back and let them. And as far as the Berlin Wall coming down, as symbolic as it was at that point, it had been a murderous division between East and West Berlin, but when it came down, it was iconic in its symbolism. It was an incredible thing to watch. I can remember seeing it on the tube, and it was a glorious moment indeed. So from that, and from the talk of the peace dividend and all the money that would now be freed up for social welfare programs in this country, for education, for medical research, for health care, for budget balancing, for environmental issues, for infrastructure rebuilding, just on. Do you remember that talk about the peace dividend that was going to occur now that the Cold War, the 50-year-long Cold War, had finally ended? Well, here's how far we've come, and especially after the last 7 years of George W. Bush. Yesterday, Russia's military leaders successfully test-fired a new intercontinental ballistic missile capable of carrying multiple nuclear warheads. This is a weapon that's intended to replace aging Soviet-era missiles. And the reason they need them, of course, is because, or think they need them, is because of the aggressive, warlike actions of the Bush crime family. Let me just share a little bit with this with you. The missile was launched from the so-and-so launch facility in northern Russia, and its test warheads successfully hit designated targets on the such-and-such testing range on the Kamchatka Peninsula, some 4,340 miles away from the launch. A spokesman for the Russian military said the missile carried multiple warheads, but refused to say how many. You know, I took Molly to see the Nutcracker, and it just reminds me of the Mouse King, or as it is depicted in most stagings, the Rat King, this multi-headed beast that the Nutcracker slays. But I digress. The Strategic Missile Forces said in a statement that the missile was launched from a mobile launcher. Well, that's nice. Makes it impossible to target it, right? Existing missiles, it's a Topol-M, carry a single nuclear warhead and capable of hitting targets more than 6,000 miles away. The reason for all this, President Vladimir Putin has used all these oil revenues that Russia has now. They're just awash in oil money, to modernize Russia's military arsenals amid, I love this, increasing tensions with the West. The Kremlin has fiercely opposed U.S. plans to deploy missile defense sites in Poland and the Czech Republic, saying they threaten Russia's security. Well, of course they do. And of course this is a response. So here we are on the cusp of 2008, and George W. Bush and the neocons and Dick Cheney and the murderous policies of this corrupt administration has led us to the Cold War Redux.
government of the State of Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, represented respectively Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and President Mahmoud Abbas.
And a partridge in a pear tree. Oh, my God. I've been requested to... requested by a very dedicated listener to this program in the Great White. No. As a matter of fact, no. In Washington State, Vancouver, Washington State, to read the Lawrence Ferlinghetti poem "Christ Climbed Down." I've mentioned on this program before, and it's beat poetry, so it's not really weird. It's not that long. So, I would like to get a quick poll here as to yes, read it, no, don't. I don't know how many of you are familiar with, it came out in the 50s. I think it was late 50s. Not too long before or after, I guess after, Allen Ginsberg's howl. But anyway, it's "Christ Climbed Down," and it's great to read around Christmas. So we'll do a quick poll. Just email me, mike@mikemalloy.com, very quickly. Yes, that means read it. Just put it in the subject line so I don't have to open. Just put yes, which means read it. No, which means don't. Because, I know some of you have gotten very upset with some of the poetry readings we've had on the program. I think Bob the Poet in Tennessee, I love his work, and a couple other people. I realize talk radio is not a particularly good place to do poetry unless you're dedicating a night to it. But you all have put up with an awful lot on this program, including the reading of the entire novel, 1984. So let me know if you want to hear "Christ Climb Down" very quickly, because if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it after the next break. It doesn't take that long to read the whole thing, but just send me a yes or a no. Yes as in read it, no as in don't. We are approaching who was it, Scott McClellan, or was it R.A. Fleischer, who, when informed that U.S. war deaths in Iraq, occupation deaths, had reached a certain number, was it Fleischer, Kathy, who said to us it's just a number? Who said that? They just didn't believe in milestones.
I think that was Simple Scotty.
Was that Simple Scotty?
Who said, it's a number. No, wait a minute. That was Tony Snow.
Tony Snow.
Okay. Foxy the Snowman, who said, it's a number.
We're about to reach another number. As of Christmas Day, the U.S. military death count reached 3,897. Those are military personnel who have died in Iraq as a result of Bush's murderous insanity. That's according to the Associated Press. The in case you're keeping track, the British have lost 174 dead, Italy 33, Ukraine 18, Poland 21, Bulgaria 13, Spain 11, Denmark 7, El Salvador 5, Slovakia 4, Latvia 3, Estonia, Netherlands, Thailand, Romania 2 each, and Australia, Hungary, Kazakhstan, South Korea 1. Death each. Since the start of operations in Iraq, about 30,000 members of the U.S. military have been wounded in hostile action. The death toll of Iraqis, of course, is the official toll is unknown, because as one of the early proconsuls said, one of the early invaders, one of the early crusaders said in Iraq, we don't do body counts. The best estimates from international agencies are in the neighborhood of anywhere from 300,000 to 1 million unnecessary deaths caused by the invasion and the occupation. The invasion and the occupation by the United States and the so-called coalition of the willing. Since March of 2003. It's astonishing, isn't it? I think it's astonishing. The death toll of the Iraqis has gone up, at least 28 from whatever it was. The Washington Post reports that two bombs in separate Iraqi cities ripped through crowds of people on Christmas Day, causing some of the worst carnage in that country in recent weeks and revealing that insurgent groups remain capable of these attacks no matter what the liar Petraeus or the murderous traitor Dick Cheney or the fool George Bush would have us believe. At least 100 people were wounded. The mayor of Baiji, where an oil refinery town where one of these bombs went off, said this is one of our worst attacks. He said most of the victims were civilians, including unknown number of women and children. We'll be back after the break. It looks like the vote is yes, although we've got one. No! But the no's are outnumbered here, about 20 to 1. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. If you want to, for about 4 minutes after this break ends, go do something else because we're going to read the poem. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Prime Minister and I discussed the humanitarian needs. We understand the fright that can come when you're worried about a rocket landing on top of your home.
Rocket landing on top of your home. I'm sure most of you have seen the picture making the rounds, the Christmas card from the White House of George and Pickles. We live in a sick country. We thank God. All right. In response to an overwhelming yes vote, we're going to read, one of the more famous Christmas poems here. Maybe not as famous as the night before. And to all you people that sent in impassioned no's, I'm sorry. You've been outvoted. We don't have any music for this, do we? Do we have any finger snapping? That's what was big back then. If we had some, I don't know, some Brubeck or something. All right, well, just do it in your own head. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where there were no rootless Christmas trees hung with candy canes and breakable stars. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where there were no gilded Christmas trees and no tinsel Christmas trees and no tinfoil Christmas trees, and no pink plastic Christmas trees, and no gold Christmas trees, and no black Christmas trees, and no powder blue Christmas trees hung with electric candles and encircled by tin electric trains and clever cornball relatives. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where there were no intrepid Bible salesmen covering the territory in two-tone Cadillacs and where no Sears Roebuck creatures complete with plastic babe and manger arrived by parcel post, the babe by special delivery, and where no televised wise men praised the Lord Calvert whiskey. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where no fat hand-shaking stranger in a red flannel suit and a fake white beard went around passing himself off as some sort of North Pole saint crossing the desert to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, in a Volkswagen sled drawn by rollicking Adirondack reindeer and with German names and bearing sacks of humble gifts from Saks Fifth Avenue for everybody's imagined Christ child. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where no Bing Crosby carolers groaned of a tight Christmas and where no Radio City Angels ice skated wingless through a winter wonderland into a jingle bell heaven daily at 8:30 with midnight mass matinees. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and softly stole away into some anonymous Mary's womb again, where in the darkest night of everybody's anonymous soul, he awaits again an unimaginable and impossibly immaculate reconception, the very craziest of second comings. Boy, those were the days, huh? Lawrence Ferlinghetti, copyright sometime in the 50s. What else do we have? See, that wasn't so bad. All you people out there that were going, no, there ain't any boundary. From Jack. Good evening, Mike. Regarding Cold War Redux, let's not forget that Japan just test-fired its first Raytheon-built Standard Missile 3. The Japan Maritime Self-Defense Force successfully flight-tested its first Raytheon company on the New York Stock Exchange. Their code is RTN. A Raytheon company-built Standard Missile 3, the SM-3 Block 1A missile, engaged and destroyed a medium-range ballistic missile target more than 60 miles above the Pacific Ocean. Personnel at the U.S. Navy's Pacific Missile Range facility on Kauai launched the missile target, while the crew of the Japanese destroyer JS Kongo fired the intercepting missile. Oy vey, Jack. Oh, my God. The Miami Herald has finally, excuse me, published an article about Congressman Robert Wexler's taking on the Bush crime family. I don't know if the Miami Herald publicized Dennis Kucinich taking on the Bush crime family by doing the same thing Wexler has done, demanding impeachment hearings of Dick Cheney. Perhaps Miami Herald did, but of course Robert Wexler is closer to home as far as the U.S. Congress is concerned. We talked about this last week. Wexler wants hearings.com. At that website, the Congress congressman is gathering signatures calling for impeachment hearings to begin against Cheney. Wexler says in a video on the site, which suggests, among other things, that Cheney manipulated intelligence to boost the case for war against Iraq and was involved in the outing of Valerie Plame. Wexler says, our Constitution mandates that the House of Representatives hold presidents and vice presidents accountable when they commit high crimes. The petition, the latest I have here, and this was sent to me, when was this sent to me? I don't have a date on it. It's over 100,000 at this point. However, the what I have here says the Wexler has the support of two Judiciary Committee Democrats, Luis Gutierrez of Illinois and Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin. Four others are co-sponsors of Dennis Kucinich's articles of impeachment for Vice President Cheney. They are Steve Cohen of Tennessee, Keith Ellison of Minnesota, Hank Johnson of Georgia, he's our guy, and Maxine Waters of California. But that leaves 14 Judiciary Committee Democrats, 14 Democrats, who have not called for impeachment hearings. There is no surprise there. And of those 14, of course, one of them is the chairman, Mr. Conyers. I wonder why not, huh? Anyway, Megan Mitchell, a spokeswoman for the murderous Dick Cheney, said the vice president is ignoring all this because, quote, he is focused on the serious issues facing this country. You son of a bitch. Oh, God. Anyway, Wexler said he calls his 2002 vote to authorize Bush to attack Iraq a mistake. And he said that Congress, his words, is way behind the rest of the country on the impeachment issue. But then Wexler went on to say he had to be convinced of how Americans feel. That's why I set up the website. Wexler said during an interview with Florida Progressive Radio, quote, when I first heard about the effort, I did not fully appreciate that the beliefs being expressed were not simply beliefs of people on the fringe. But he goes on, but the last two times talking to people in my district, I was convinced that this, in fact, is a mainstream issue, end quote. People on the fringe. Congressman, you're seriously and in a most deadly way out of touch with the people in this country if you thought it was just fringe. Is Wexler, this is a purely rhetorical question, but is Wexler not aware of poll after poll after poll that one would think that would give these cowardly Democrats cover as they would try peacefully and legally to remove these double sons of bitches from the presidency and vice presidency? Is Wexler not aware that the so-called approval ratings of this slug in the White House reached historic lows and started to climb again now because we're Americans and we are the dumbest-assed people on the face of the planet when it comes to politics? Is Wexler not aware of the line from Shakespeare, there's a tide in the affairs of men which taken at the ebb, blah, 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 blah? Is he not aware of this? Is he not aware? Wexler, he had to have a website set up and people go there and sign a petition to prove to him, okay, fair enough, Bob. How many signatures do you want? I think at one time he said he wanted to see at least 50,000. It says here, within 2 days of putting the website up, Wexler said he's had surpassed his goal of 50,000, and now he's aiming for 250,000. Wexler says the push to begin impeachment hearings is, quote, a huge uphill battle, unquote, because, you see, House leadership has not been interested. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Justify, mom and who you please. A cowboy can be fatal. He can make you paranoid. He can make you maladjusted. A person to avoid. You read against the terrorists, then murder like they do. You can claim the peaceness, terrorizing them. Your old friends and allies, you'll see as enemies. It's mighty, freaking, dangerous, mad cowboy disease. Mad cowboy disease. Mad cowboy disease.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Ten before the hour, I forgot to mention that coming up in about 40 minutes, we will do famous Uncle Mike's Story Corner this evening. We have the latest hot off the wires. Uncle Mike's Story Corner coming up at half past the next hour. I think I see some folks on hold. Let's get there. First, this is from Stephanie. Stephanie writes, Dear Mike, this Christmas has been really tough for me. My nephew, and she names him, is still in Iraq. He's stationed at Camp Hit. Don't you love the names they give them? Because his father convinced him that he had to to protect America, blah, blah, blah. He believed all the propaganda. I tried finding out what he wanted as a holiday gift, and I was told not to send anything as he does not even have enough room for what he has. No footlockers like you see in the movies. Anyway, my question to you, Mike, is it wrong for me to wish for my nephew, whom I love dearly, to get an injury that will send him home? I know if he does make it out alive, he will never be the nephew I knew mentally. I feel guilty wishing him harm, but I feel if I can just get him home, maybe there's a chance he could get the help he's going to need. Peace, Stephanie, and her last name. That's a tough one. It's a tough question. You know, your thoughts are your thoughts. There is no, as far as I'm concerned, there is no cosmic muffin or hairy thunderer who will hear your mental processes and grant you a wish. As far as focusing on the desire to see your nephew come home, regardless of alive and as uninjured as possible, keep in mind, there were an awful lot of people in America's wars, the one I'm most familiar with, Vietnam, who deliberately gave themselves an injury, usually by gunfire, so they could come home. Once they realized that, like the invasion and occupation of Iraq, the U.S. military had been, again, maybe forever, abused, misused as a weapon of corporate hegemony, an attempt to just take over every goddamn thing on the planet. So, I don't know, Stephanie. I don't know. Let's do some phone calls here. Bob is calling from Seattle. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Mike. You know, for Christmas I got the book The Israeli Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy by John Mersheimer and Stephen Walt.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, very interesting. It states here that I realized there was a first PNAC letter that, of course, all of the neocons signed.
Right.
I didn't realize there was a second letter that was revealed here, which Ann Lewis had actually signed. And, of course, Ann Lewis is very involved in the Hillary and the Clinton administration.
Yeah.
She's Barney Frank's sister.
Oh, that okay.
Yeah, Ann Lewis, you're aware of that. Also,
I wasn't aware of her involvement with the letter.
I wasn't either. This is a second PNAC letter revealed in the Israeli Lobby in U.S. Foreign Policy by John Mersheimer and Stephen Walt. The book, a good Christmas gift that I got here, very revealing about our failed foreign policy in the Middle East and the characters that of course, are involved.
Right, right. Yeah, I haven't read the book, but I know it, what... It, go ahead.
No, and Mike, I don't want to be accused of being an anti-Semitic. The book reveals... No, that the majority of the Jewish people are against this neocon misadventure. It's the neocons, the Zionist Christians, and these psychotics in the Bush administration that have just tilted everything out of kilter.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not. I'm not anti-Jewish. I love Jewish people. It's these fascist neocons, these Zionist Christian fascists that run our country. That these are the people that we should be targeting.
By targeting, you mean?
Well, but purging from our political secular government. That get rid of these people that want to just turn our country into a religious nutcase.
Well, I certainly agree with that sentiment. No matter what country might be having an influence on U.S. foreign policy for whatever reason, and I think it is a clear fact or set of facts that the United States, since the U.N. declared Israel a nation, a Jewish nation in 1948, it was declared in 1947, but since 1948, when the event actually occurred, that U.S. policy has been to unquestionably back anything that Israel did. And Israel's position, I think, has been to make sure that their intelligence organizations had totally and completely penetrated every single aspect of U.S. governance, which obviously is not that hard to do. The Russians did it. The Jews have done it. The Germans did it. By Jews, I mean the Israeli Jews. You know what I'm talking about. It was absolutely necessary to penetrate U.S. Government operations, because you never can tell when the United States will turn on you like a huge poisonous snake. So did it get out of hand? Is U.S. foreign policy determined in so many instances in the Middle East by the so-called Jewish lobby? Well, yes, of course it is. And I probably would agree with you that the majority of Americans, no matter what their religious affiliation, disagree with that whole idea. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program on the Nova M Radio Network. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Uncle Mike's Story Corner. We haven't done that for a while, so it is time. How many folks are aware that Hillary Clinton voted to continue dropping cluster bombs on civilians? Anybody aware of that? Democratic Luntz, writing at Daily Kos, brought it up a few days ago. There was a comment by Senator Clinton on foreign policy. She said, "It is tempting, anytime things seem quieter for a minute on the international front, to think that we don't need a president who is up to speed on foreign affairs and military matters." Well, that's the kind of logic that got us George Bush in the first place. End quote. The point here is that Hillary Clinton voted to let the United States military continue to use cluster bombs in areas with concentrated civilian populations, despite the fact that thousands of innocent people, including an awful lot of kids, have been killed or severely handicapped, deformed due to picking up unexploded cluster bomblets. Now, this vote was cast back in September on an amendment to the Defense Appropriation Act. The amendment was written by Senator Dianne Feinstein, and using Feinstein's own description of the amendment from the Congressional Record, here's what Feinstein said, quote, "I offer an amendment to the Defense Appropriations Bill to address a humanitarian issue that I've actually thought a great deal about over a long period of time. That is the use of the cluster bomb. The human death toll and injury from these weapons is felt every day, going back decades. Innocent children think they're picking up a toy in the field and suddenly their arm is blown off. I believe we need to take a look at our policies and adjust them. Specifically, our amendment would prevent any funds from being spent to purchase, use, or transfer cluster munitions until the rules of engagement have been adopted by the Department of Defense to ensure that such munitions will not be used in or near any concentration of civilians, be it permanent or temporary, such as inhabited parts of cities or villages or in camps or columns of refugees or evacuees. End quote. Now, Senator Feinstein's amendment here, and her thoughts around the amendment, I should say, are honorable, but they're bogus, because what she should have tried to do was introduce an amendment that would prevent the use of cluster bombs anytime ever. Now, one of the events that was appalling to a lot of Israelis was the fact that the Israeli military, in their attack into Lebanon last year, were using cluster bombs in areas where there were heavy refugee concentrations. And whether one is Russian or Israeli or American or Japanese or Ecuadorian, I don't think you have to be a worker with the Red Cross to realize that the use of cluster bombs is inhumane, inhuman, monstrous. The use of all of these weapons is monstrous. But cluster bombs seem to be almost a singular issue. When they hit the ground and don't explode, as Feinstein's explains, and you can find out yourself by doing an internet search on this, they look like toys. In Afghanistan, the cluster bombs were a bright orange, the same color as the food packets that were dropped 4 or 5 years ago when we first invaded that country, resulting in, yeah, you're way ahead of me, an awful lot of people who reached down and picked up a live explosive that then ripped open their abdomen and killed them, or blew off an arm or a leg. And in so many instances, because parents had already been killed or injured by the attack, the NATO-led bombing, the NATO-involved bombing of their villages or what have you, children were sent out to scrounge around and try to find some food, and they would find these things. They were told the food packets were dropped by the Americans. Go get one. Well, the Americans had also dropped cluster bombs that looked rather similar, to the untrained eye of a 10-year-old in Afghanistan. Cluster bombs. And they're made up of something called bomblets. We have been using these weapons in every war since Vietnam. Feinstein went on to say, cluster munitions are large bombs, rockets, or artillery shells that contain up to hundreds of small submunitions or individual bomblets. They are intended for attacking enemy troop formations and armor, covering approximately a 6/10 of a mile radius. In other words, their swath is over half a mile. Yet in practice, they pose a real threat to the safety of civilians when used in populated areas, because they leave hundreds of unexploded bombs over a very large area, and they're often inaccurate. They end up in streets and cities where men and women go to work and do their shopping. They end up in groves of trees and fields where children play. They end up in homes where families live. And in some cases, up to 40% of cluster bombs fail to explode, posing a particular danger to civilians long after the conflict has ended. This is particularly and sadly true of children, because bomblets are no bigger than a D battery and in some cases resemble a tennis ball. Children outside with their friends and relatives come across these cluster bomblets. They pick them up out of curiosity because they look like balls and start playing with them. And a terrible result follows. Many countries are full of these bomblets, and many more innocent children will die no matter what. Look at these figures. Laos, 7 to 27 million unexploded bomblets. Iraq, 1.2 million. Lebanon, 100,000. 84 countries are currently trying to participate in the Oslo process to ban cluster munitions. Of course, we're not part of this either. The vote was taken September 6, 2006, on Dianne Feinstein's amendment to the Defense Appropriations Act. 30 Democrats voted yes to ban these things. 15 Democrats and every Republican voted no. Don't ban them. Don't keep them out of population areas. No. The people who voted, the Democrats who voted to continue to use cluster bomblets are by Biden, Clinton, Dodd, Inouye, Landrieu, Lautenberg, Lieberman, Lincoln, both Nelsons, Florida and Nebraska, Pryor, Rockefeller, Salazar, and Schumer. Each one of those Democrats voted with every single Republican in the United States Senate to deny the amendment that would have simply said, we have got to stop doing this. We've got to stop doing this. So when Hillary Clinton talks about someone who is up to speed, her words, on foreign affairs and military matters, that apparently means voting to continue the indiscriminate use of cluster bombs. I have a hard time with Hillary Clinton as a possible president in the White House. I know a lot of you are looking forward to a Clinton presidency because you believe, you know, any Democrat in the White House would be better than what we have now. Be careful what you wish for. I know a lot of people, a lot of pundits, a lot of common folk like you and me consider this to be a done deal, that Hillary Clinton is going to be the next president. It doesn't make any difference how many candidates are in the Democratic field who are not in favor of the use of cluster bombs. But before you vote for Hillary, you know, maybe what you could do, or any candidate for that matter, is check their record. Like we're running Ron Paul commercials now. Check the record. Just check the record. That's all. Spend 15 minutes and check their record.
Oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a war with no guns? No one giving orders to kill. No one saying fire at will. Wouldn't it be nice to have a gun?
Understand those who say you can't win this thing militarily. That's exactly what the United States military says, that you can't win this military.
Oh, really? From the BBC a couple of days ago, there was an Israeli military inquiry into the use of that country's deployment of cluster bombs in last year's Lebanon war. It was under investigation. And according to the BBC from a couple of days ago, Monday, I think, a decision has been reached. The Israeli army announced there would be no indictments against officers who ordered the use of cluster bombs. The statement said, quote, the use of the weaponry was a concrete military necessity, end quote. The UN called Israel's cluster bombing, quote, shocking and immoral, end quote, as most of the cluster bombs were used in the last 72 hours of fighting when a resolution was clearly imminent. The findings, according to the BBC, were accepted by the Army's Judge Advocate General. The UN says about 4 million cluster bomblets were dropped on Lebanon during the 34-day conflict. Many of them failed to explode on impact. More than 30 people have been killed by cluster bombs and landmine explosions since that war. Cluster bombs are not illegal under the laws of war. People who are working to get them banned say their use in populated areas constitutes an indiscriminate attack on civilians. All right, that was from the Israeli military prosecutors. And back to Senator Feinstein's resolution of September 6th to ban these things. The most compelling reason Feinstein gave, according to Democratic Luntz, writing at Daily Kos, was neither humanitarian nor military-oriented. It was entirely strategic. Here's what she said. Quote, I also know that there is a dud rate. In other words, a rate at which point these bomblets do not explode. So I ask this question. How are we supposed to win the hearts and minds of civilians in these countries where we leave behind such deadly weapons that indiscriminately kill their young children? How are we supposed to speed up reconstruction efforts, building homes, schools, hospitals, clinics, ensuring electricity and water supplies, when populated areas are littered with these bombs? End quote. And as Democratic Luntz wrote, that's a good point. When someone's kid is killed by picking up a small piece of shiny explosive from a bomb in the United States dropped on your country, they're not going to be very happy with the United States. In fact, they're very likely to start hating us. And yet, despite this, Senator Clinton, Senator Biden, and Senator Dodd voted against the amendment. So anyone who thinks that Hillary is a liberal or stands outside that circle of killers and warmongers and imperialists and thinks that Hillary is not backed to the hilt by AIPAC, please spare yourself the embarrassment of 6 months down the road or a year down the road after you have participating in putting Senator Clinton in office. Spare yourself the embarrassment of realizing that you have voted for George Bush Light. In fact, maybe a better way would be Dick Cheney Light, since Bush is nothing but a goof who sits there as the president, the ceremonial head of this great and wondrous nation. And the real power behind the office of the presidency, of course, is Cheney. So don't be surprised. I don't mean that patronizingly. I'm serious. Don't be surprised when Senator Clinton becomes President Clinton and continues the policies in several areas of the world, including the Middle East, that have been laid out there by presidents since, oh God, I don't know, going back to whom? To Truman? I guess. Remember the last president who publicly chastised the Israelis for their policies against the Palestinians was, believe it or not, George Herbert Walker Bush, which is one of the reasons he was defeated by Bill Clinton in 1992. Not to make a brief for George Herbert Walker Bush, he is he's an anti-Semite and a pro-Nazi and so on and so forth. But his statement about the Israeli government that was mildly critical, if even critical is the wrong word, mildly debatable about some of the policies of the Israeli government back then in the late 80s. That was enough to in some people's minds, to deny him a second term. So, the reason I bring this up is, first of all, cluster bombs are horrific. Only the minds of human beings could come up with something like that, huh? Jesus. And secondly, because Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and Chris Dodd are in favor of the continued use of these weapons against civilians and for the most part against children. That is disgusting and contemptible and vile.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath.
Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. A little background on our Uncle Mike Story Corner author tonight. She is Sally Quinn. She has her family has esteemed history in addition to being trendsetters and fashion setters and party setters in Washington, D.C. for a number of years. Her dad was Lieutenant General William Wilson Buffalo Bill Quinn. He was an intelligence officer who played a role in the transition of the United States Intelligence Service from the OSS to the CIA. From 1964 to 1966, he was commander of the 7th Army in Germany. Senator Barry Goldwater spent a lot of time with the Quinns, often staying at their home when he was a senator. Quinn is married, you probably know, to Ben Bradley, the former editor of the Washington Post and her former boss. Sally Quinn's great-great-great-grandfather was William Williams, who was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. She is also a third cousin of Mayflower passenger William Brewster. Kids. It's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Gather around. It's cold out there tonight. I hope you're all snuggly in your jammies. For those of you on the West Coast, I realize it's not quite jammy time yet. But anyway, tonight, Uncle Mike's Story Corner is written by Sally Quinn. As a child, I went to a small school in rural Alabama near an army post where my father was stationed. It was a very Christian town, and our teacher was born again. This was decades ago, but I remember clearly how she used to tell us that we must accept Jesus Christ as our personal Savior. Then she would ask for hands to see who had. By age 11, I had become a non-believer. My father was in the Army and had fought in World War II in Korea. I concluded quickly that no loving God could have allowed those atrocities to be committed. But we had all seen our teacher, when crossed, call an unlucky member of our class up to the front of the room, make the student lie down on her desk, and be paddled. The humiliation was worse than the pain. So when she called on us to admit that we had accepted Jesus as our Savior, I dutifully raised my hand. Thank goodness those days are over, you might be thinking. Nothing like that could happen in this country today. Well, think again. It happened this month, right here in Washington. On December 11th, H.R. 847 was passed in the House of Representatives. Just listen to what our lawmakers have resolved. Whereas Christmas, a holiday of great significance to America, it begins, is celebrated annually by Christians throughout the United States. It goes on to state, among other things, that Christianity is the religion of over three-fourths of the American population, and American Christians observe Christmas, the holiday celebrating the birth of their Savior, Jesus Christ, and Christmas is celebrated as a recognition of God's redemption, mercy, and grace. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the House of Representatives expresses continued support for Christians in the United States, acknowledges and supports the role played by Christians and Christianity in the founding of the United States, rejects bigotry and persecution directed against Christians, both in the United States and worldwide, and expresses its deepest respect to American Christians. For brevity, I have omitted the resolution's references to Christianity around the world. This resolution passed with 195 Democratic yes votes, 177 Republican yes votes, and 9 Democratic noes. No Republicans voted against it. 10 House members voted present. 40 were not there, including the bill's sponsor, Representative Steve King of Iowa. Among those voting for the resolution was a Jewish member of Congress who has asked me not to print his name. He was outraged and appalled by the bill, he told me, but he was also afraid. He thought it would hurt him with his mostly Christian constituency if he voted against it. He told some of his colleagues about his anguish. They advised him not to be stupid. it would be better for him politically if he voted for it. It's possible that the 10 who voted present also had problems with the bill, but decided it was safer not to vote against it. One could also assume that some of those who were absent were not there so as not to have to deal with the problem. Earlier this year, the House passed resolutions honoring Islamic and Indian holidays, but nothing that so equated a single faith with America and Americans. How could this happen? In what will soon be 2008, in a pluralistic, multicultural, multi-religious society, a society based on the concepts of religious freedom and separation of church and state, what were they thinking? This resolution was as anti-American as anything Congress has ever passed. It disenfranchised and marginalized millions and millions of men and women, reducing them to second-class citizens. How about this next time around? Whereas all holidays have great significance to some Americans, be it resolved that the House of Representatives expresses its deepest respect to Americans of all faiths and non-faith alike. Uncle Mike's Story Corner for this Wednesday, December 26, 2007. The author was Sally Quinn of the Washington Post. All right, for those of you who are supposed to be in bed at this hour, please go. It's time. Back to your phone calls. Ann is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening, I would assume, on 94.1 The Mic. Is that right, Ann?
No, 92.1.
92.1, my bad. Whoops.
I have to thank your answer, your call handler.
Uh-huh.
He's looking into a problem that we've been having here in Madison, getting your program. And tonight.
So I heard. I got a couple of emails that said some other broadcast was on. All I can think of is that some weekend person at 92.1 The Mic pushed the wrong button. Not weekend person, but some substitute person pushed the wrong button, pulled the wrong program down from the satellite. I'm sure it'll soon be taken care of.
Well, the program they pulled down are a couple right-wing imbeciles, so it's really infuriating.
Right. Well, I think maybe a phone call to your radio station tomorrow
morning.
Well,
I've tried that. Maybe tomorrow.
Yeah.
Maybe by then I won't be quite so steamed.
I hear you.
But I do depend on your program quite a bit, and I worry about losing the source of information. I'm probably the least technological person on the planet. So
No, the second least. I am the least. Were it not for Kathy, I don't think I'd be able to turn my computer on every day. But anyway.
Well, there was announced on a news break a few days ago that Wall Street and the defense corporate elite were backing Hillary. And to me, that was just a signal that the voice of the people is irrelevant, that they're calling the shots. And that made me feel disenfranchised.
Do you want to hear something that may make you feel even worse, Ann? This came out today, I think, the Associated Press. George Bush and Hillary Clinton are the man and woman most admired by Americans. let's see. What does it say here? When people were asked to name the man they most admire, 10% picked Bush. That's his lowest figure in the 7 years he has been president. Bill Clinton got 8%. Gore got 6%. Barack Obama got 5%. When it came to Hillary Clinton, she was named by 18% as the most admired woman. That's the 12th time she's been in that top spot. Oprah Winfrey was second with 16%. Laura Bush and Angelina Jolie were each tied at 3%. The poll of 1,000-plus adults was taken between December 14th and 16th, had a margin of error of plus or minus 3 points. But George Bush and Hillary Clinton. And I just find that astonishing. I mean, granted, Hillary got maybe twice as many votes as Bush. He wound up with 10%. She wound up with 18%. But still, of all the males in America, Bush? And of all the women in America, Hillary?
Well, I was, I spent most of my adult life in Chicago and was there for the blizzard of 79, which brought in Jane Byrne, and yeah. We voted for Jane Byrne thinking, boy, the old boys network is going to be finished. And she out old boyed the whole Daily outfit.
Hey, Ann, let me put you on hold for a second because we haven't gotten to the reason for your call yet, and I've got a break. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
10 before the hour, we're talking with Ann, who has called in from Madison, Wisconsin. All right, your forecast for the 2008 election, Ann.
Well, I think Hillary has got it. I mean, if the traditional elites have decided that Hillary is acceptable, it looks like the will of the people is simply irrelevant. And
but what is the will of the people?
Well,
every poll, the reason, I'm sorry to interrupt, every poll I see, and I tend to believe polls depending on how they're worded, but whether or not they're a so-called push poll or what have you, but every poll I see, Ann, indicates that Hillary is far and away, nationally speaking, the leader in these political polls. So maybe this is what America wants.
Well, I remember you talked about an ABC poll after a debate, after a Democratic debate, in which Dennis Kucinich was voted the winner of the debate.
Well, but that was an online poll, and there is nothing more useless than an online poll. I mean, I go to them all the time, given a chance, and we'll click, just for the sheer hell of it. But online polls are, first of all, they're self-selecting. They are not scientific, and it's just gibberish. And the point I was making is that most people who listened to that debate and then went to ABC or heard about the poll, voted for Kucinich, but those are not in the least bit representative of political attitudes, at least insofar as polling is concerned. Now, there may be a huge groundswell of Americans who are either going to vote for Kucinich or Ron Paul. The guy on the Democrat side, Democratic side, the guy on the Republican side, that are the absolute, I hate this word, mavericks of their political parties. But I don't see that happening. I think you're absolutely right that Clinton has it locked up. We'll soon know, won't we?
Well, it seems a very drawn out process to me. It seems as though the die has already been cast, and the next several months are just waiting for the inevitable.
I get the same sense that you get, Anne, that that's one of the reasons both political parties, but especially the Democrats, have so skewed their primary process so that everything is decided almost at once. There is, and most of it is decided in the eastern part of the United States. These primaries are a joke. There's absolutely no reason for these primaries. And to have them all front-loaded, I believe is the term, where a decision is made in February. Is it February?
Yeah.
And by the time most of the states have a primary, it's meaningless insofar as who gets the money and who gets the media support. Of course, media have already decided that Clinton, Obama, and Edwards are the three front runners. And if you want to pare it down even more, Clinton and Obama are the front runners. They're the ones. That's the horse race. Everybody else can go back to whatever they were doing. And in the Republican Party, they've decided that Mitt Romney and now this religious psychopath from Arkansas, Mike Huckabee, are the front runners. It's insane. Our system is totally, totally nuts, insane. I think the only thing that might turn this country around would be to chuck the system we have now and go to a parliamentary system, which would immediately whatever they call it, secondary voting, where you vote for two or three different candidates but at one time. But that's too complicated for most Americans to understand. The parliamentary system, I think, is one that we could all easily understand. A vote of no confidence would have removed a thug like George Bush before he could have done the kind of damage he's already done. The only problem with the parliamentary system, it requires that people have a bit of understanding about political parties and the system and the electoral process. Most English-speaking countries or countries where English is at least second or third language, second language, the parliamentary system is in place. And I think that where it is used and used effectively, it can remove people unless they become like Musharraf, who says, to hell with the parliamentary system, I'm going to be the dictator, whether you like it or not. Or in the case of Putin in Russia, where the parliamentary system is nothing but what it was in the Soviet days, just a rubber stamp. But in so many countries, parliamentary system, don't you agree, is effective?
Well, I feel that I remember as a child thinking how horrible it must be to live in a totalitarian state.
Mm.
And now I'm thinking I'm getting some firsthand experience. And I find it so disheartening. I mean, to say that one feels disenfranchised is not hyperbole, that the whole system
you're right.
Is already decided by those who actually hate democracy and feel that people are expendable, which I find absolutely disgusting.
Well, you get no argument from me. The fact that the system is skewed to prevent third-party candidates, except as a spoiler, like Ross Perot or possibly Ralph Nader, or possibly George Wallace, had he not been shot. The system is skewed to prevent the rise of a third or fourth or fifth party. That's A. B. Now, one of those parties, this corrupt Republican Party, has decided that that's not good enough, and they made sure that all the voting machines in the country could be altered to favor their candidates. And the Democrats just sit back and said, thank you, sir, may I have another? So, I think you're right. And listen, keep your chin up, though, because it ain't over till it's over, as Yogi Berra or somebody said.
Well, it's wonderful to hear your voice, and I really mean that.
Well, thank you for checking in. I appreciate it, Ann. And maybe tomorrow call 92.1 The Mic and raise old Billy Hell with him. Thanks, Ann. We'll be back after the break. Truth Seekers, I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
In the midnight choir, I have tried.
Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. This is the Nova M Radio Network, the Molloy program. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for hanging around. You still here? Oh, my God. Prairie 2 writes in regarding Hillary's spin. Prairie 2 writes, hey, Mike, Edwards is expected to win handily in Iowa. The spin being put on this by the corporate media is that Hillary wants Edwards to win in Iowa so that Obama won't. This way the headlines will be, Hillary loses, not Obama wins. No mention of Edwards, of course. Edwards could walk on water and the headline would be, Hillary survives near drowning. Yeah. I know. And Suzanne in North Miami sends me the web address here. And I went to it during the break, and I knew about this, but I didn't know about it because I couldn't recall. And I'm just getting to that age where I can't recall things here on the CBS radio network. Oops, wait a minute. That's not where I was. The place to go to get your information about the candidates, Democrat, Republican, whatever, is vote-smart.org. Vote-smart.org. It's all there. Navigate the website and you can find anything you want to find. Vote-smart.org. You can remember that. Don't send me an email saying, would you repeat that? We say vote-smart.org. Okay? It's all there. Back to your phone calls. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Edie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you? Have a good Christmas?
Yeah, it was pretty good. My sister managed to smuggle 2 good books to me that I've been wanting to read, Armed Madhouse and Letters to the Earth.
Oh, good.
Yes, you can imagine. You found them in Dogpatch here.
I'll be damned. Both good books.
Yes. I saw something again on the News Hour, and apparently there are military high schools in urban areas in Chicago, Illinois. Isn't that charming?
I think I knew that because, you know, we lived there for almost 4 years.
Yeah.
At the end of the 90s. I think I knew that.
Of course, the military men that run these schools, oh, it has nothing to do with recruitment.
Of course not.
Well, the other one.
Right.
Oh, well, I just thought I'd get it out there in case anybody missed it. I was disgusted and horrified, but not surprised, really.
Well, aren't they? But they're private schools, aren't they, Edie?
Oh, they're public schools.
Right.
In urban areas, there are none in the suburbs. None.
Gee, I wonder what that means.
Gee. You reckon they're just, you know, once again, sizing up the poor and the blacks and the Hispanics to more easily put uniforms on them as soon as they graduate?
Could be.
Mm-hmm.
Could very well be.
Well, that's all I got, Mike.
All right, Edie. Take it easy, okay?
All
right, we'll talk again. Lloyd is calling from Framingham, Mass. Hey, Lloyd.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
And can you repeat that again? No, I'm kidding.
vote-smart.org.
Another fantastic show.
Oh, well, thanks.
That's why I love listening to you. And you put so much out tonight. God. The woman that I revere the most, if I can, for 1 second, is the woman who takes care of my brother in a nursing home in New Jersey for the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll put her above any other woman in the country.
Mm-hmm.
People like that who do that kind of work, man, hard work, tough work. She's been doing it a long time. Yeah, I have a hard time walking in there for more than 20 minutes.
I hear you.
And it's tough. I'm called for a couple of reasons. One, I'm a small business underwriter for one of the largest banks in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And help manage one of the largest portfolios of small business loans in the country.
Right.
And the subprime problem that we have been having
Yes.
is nothing compared to the tsunami that's coming, which is already on its way and has been on its way, which is the small business loans, the small business owners that are going out of business all across the country.
What is that attributed?
Well, that's a very complicated question. The very short answer is most of the supporting jobs, the supporting economy from 1980 forward has left the country. Most of the wealth has left this country. But you're talking about the entire steel industry, the entire textile industry, the entire auto industry, one industry after another, the big industries where hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people, union workers, non-union workers, have left. Those manufacturing jobs are gone.
And the small businesses were the ones that provided product and services to those bigger industries?
That's to a large extent, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But with all of that wealth gone, that's with, since 1980, the United States becoming a debtor country both in trade and in our annual debt. There simply is, and plus the now just recently, the recent tsunami, it's bigger than anything I've seen in the 25 years I've been doing it, is the increase in oil, wood, food, all of the, commodities.
Right.
That is what is putting people out of work, the sole proprietors. And I'm talking about, in my portfolio, what I've seen, trucking companies all over, large and small, going out of business. All kinds of companies. I mean, even including law firms. It's unbelievable. And what is going along with that, and again, it's not being talked about, is because these are small business loans, small business companies, companies with $10 million in revenue and less, which is usually 20 people in employment or less. So we're talking about a huge amount of people.
Well, I just read something in the Atlanta newspaper here over the past couple of days, and I don't know if it was a locally written story from a national perspective or if it was picked up from the Associated Press and New York Times, but it was talking about the next big horror facing America. It didn't mention small business loans. What it mentioned was plastic, the consumer credit that, consumer indebtedness where it concerns credit cards, that it is just absolutely phenomenal. And people in that business have noticed an uptick now in people paying off debt or attempting to, paying minimums, paying at 26, 27, 29% interest, which means effectively they will never get the bill paid off. But the amount of credit card debt is just astronomical, and no one is really addressing that yet, not out here in the public.
And you hit it exactly right. And I've made call after call after call to Senator Collins, who for a long time was pushing this issue, Barney Frank, who's on banking in the House. You're right. There is a tremendous amount of an increase in debt. And the reason why is because people are making less. They need that card for the short time that it's going to take them to get to the next day.
Right. Hey, hold on a second, Lloyd. I've got to do a break here, but I want to hear the rest of what you got to say, so let me put you on hold. We'll play some music. We'll take a break. We'll be back. Stay with us, Truth Seeker. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Thank you. where if you can't think, it's going to be hard to be a productive worker in the workplace.
He is so stupid. All right, let's go back to Lloyd, who has called in from Framingham, Mass. He's a bank underwriter. And all right, you also want to mention something about the litigation that's coming, Lloyd?
Well, litigation. That's another whole show, Mike.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be, litigation. That's a whole separate thing. There's going to be a huge amount of, the litigation, actually, okay, just to get back to that issue for a second, the litigation, the part of the small business owners that I was talking about, one owner in the family usually owns it, sometimes two, but it really doesn't matter whether it's, either the husband or the wife or one or the other, or both.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that once a business goes out and once they lose that business because they can no longer afford the loans, the amount of money coming in has declined, like in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, Ohio, parts of New Jersey, a lot of New York, most of the country. The family breaks up, and that's the second part of that, which has never talked about. I have seen for the first time in my 25 years of doing this, at this level. And so you're also going to see on the back end of this a tremendous amount of people who have lost their jobs, who used to work for themselves maybe for 20 years, who may have had a gas station, may have had a hair salon, may have had or been part of a law firm, no longer can do that or are now working for something where they're making half the amount of money.
Right.
Like you said, they can't pay the $100,000 in credit card bills that I do see on a tremendous amount of credit reports.
Mm.
And with an unregulated or what used to be a regulated industry, the banking industry can now charge almost any amount at any time. And like you said, because the amounts are so high and the fees are so high and built in, they can never pay it back.
Right.
And so you have this tsunami that is building and a tremendous amount of people that were once working, once paying their mortgages, which, again, is another thing that's coming, is not these subprime things. Forget that. These are regular loans that can't be paid back. Regular loans.
Mm-hmm.
That cannot be paid back. They were making making plenty of money when they first signed up for them. They aren't now because the economy is sinking. And on the back end of it, broken homes and people, a tremendous amount of people going into human service agencies and needing that help. And these are people just like you and me. So that's a very important point I wanted to make. I did want to make one more point.
And okay.
Just for one second.
Okay, go ahead.
And that is, I still do call. I did call you once before about a half a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I still call every day to congressmen and senators. And very quickly, Conyers, I called last week. I asked, when is the impeachment? Now, he's got a book on impeachment.
Right.
And his staff member said, there are no plans for impeachment. And I said, do I have Conyers' office? And I said, how can you not have plans for impeachment? He wrote a book on it.
Mm-hmm.
They hung up on me the second time I called.
Oh,
okay?
Jesus.
That's what I got.
Yeah.
Second, Harry Reid, I simply got hung up on when I asked about impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
Pelosi, I got hung up on. So that's where they're at, and that's how they talk to an informed person like me, and how they may talk to everybody else is really horrific. I can't imagine. And I'm going to vote for Edward, just to let you know.
Well, I'm like I said last week, I think Kathy and I are leaning that way, too, without a doubt. Lloyd, I got to leave there. Listen, thanks a lot, pal. I hope you'll stay in touch. Don't let 6 months go by, because you understand some stuff or are witnessing some stuff on the inside, quote, quote, that those of us on the outside are only hearing about periodically in the business section in the New York Times or what have you. So please stay in touch and keep us abreast of this stuff, because it's, you know, it has me concerned, too. I'm not privy to that kind of information. But I do have friends. I've got a friend in the reverse mortgage business that is has told me that there is just, well, it said essentially the same thing that Lloyd just said. I've got some other friends who are in the real estate business who are just all of a sudden frantic. So I just doesn't stop, does it, Truth Seeker? Stick around. Break coming up here and then the final half hour. This is the Malloy Program on the Nova M Radio Network.
Get ready for the future. It is murder.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
It's about 26 before the hour. Let's go right back to your phone calls. William is calling from Hollywood, California. Hey, William. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
Panicked after listening to all these calls. Oh my God.
Yeah, well, Happy New Year to you, too.
Yeah. You know, it feels like a lot of people are going to be walking into 2008 through a tripwire.
Yes, avoiding cluster bomblets.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, these last few calls, especially this last one, just really startling stuff. You know, you know about it, but it's still startling when you hear more reality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all I need to hear is any candidate, I don't care if it's a presidential hopeful or a senator or a congressman, if they're okay with cluster bombs, then I have no interest in them whatsoever. That's all it takes for me.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need in this country is a humanitarian across the board. Not in just this country, but across the board, all across the world, a humanitarian wants to deal with the global warming issues, all these enormous issues we have to deal with.
And that would, to me, that would mean electing people to these critically important offices who are not fixated on some crazed religious belief.
Exactly.
People who are rational, people who... can approach the problems we have not from some superstitious or religious point of view, but from a realistic, from a practical, a real-world point of view.
A real-world humanitarian point of view, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all stacked, which is a horrifying thought in itself. People have to realize that if someone's just with one matter, the cluster bombs, and then before it was the landmines, which I don't know if they still use or not, probably.
Well, sure.
This alone should tell people, these people that believe in this or voted for that are not the people we needed to run this country. You know, I'm ashamed enough to be an American as it is already.
Mm-hmm.
And to go through another election, if we have another election that you can call an election, what are we going to end up with? There's just so many things that have to be repaired.
I know.
But you know, I just, you know, I could not, within my heart, I could not vote for anybody that would vote yes to keep cluster bombs.
No, and when you stop and think about it, that the person who would do that has got to be someone who, I don't know, is lacking a very key element of humanity. It's got to be somebody who hates children, because nobody can plead ignorance about how these cluster bombs work. It's got to be somebody who's anti-life. It's got to be somebody who's really screwed up in the head to do anything that would support the use of, as far as I'm concerned, just about any munition. But especially cluster bombs, because they are so personal. I mean, the victim, the people who aren't killed when they're first dropped, the subsequent victims have to walk over and pick it up and actually get right up to it. And whatever the kid is thinking, oh, look, here's something I can play with.
Right.
Usually these things are discovered in areas that have seen a lot of strife, a lot of war. There aren't institutions that are there to take care of kids, whether they're social institutions or schools or whatever. And, you know, the kids are out and they pick these things up. And it goes off in their faces, and they die, or they're horribly disfigured and blown to pieces. And how anyone in so-called civilized Christian countries, I mean, what kind of Christian would and I'm picking on Christians. What kind of a Christian, what kind of a Jew, what kind of a Muslim would vote in favor of using these weapons?
What kind of a human being?
Yeah, but especially the ones who profess all this, you know,
right.
this religious claptrap about, you know, dignity.
The safety that they hide behind.
Yeah, the human dignity and, you know, God and all this. It just infuriates me.
You know, it's like with Vietnam. To this day, I'm sure there's still landmines that are still blowing off limbs. I mean, these things just don't go away, you know?
Right. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, listen, William, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal.
Okay, well.
All right. I appreciate you checking in. Was William finished? Where'd he go? William, are you still there?
Yeah.
I was saying goodbye. You wanted to say something else real quick?
I just wanted to wish you a happy new year.
Thanks. Thanks, William. Same
You're
to
welcome.
You. All right. Take care. Sometimes I'm a little fast on the trigger here in the calls. Carla is calling from Fall River, Mass. Hey, Carla, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. I wrote to you today. I don't know if you read it yet, but I'm a friend of Victor Lopez.
Oh, you're going to go down and visit him. You have a son-in-law? You have a
half-brother who I've never met who lives down there.
In North Carolina, that's right. Well, good for you. If you make the trip down.
If I make it, yeah.
Yeah, say hi to
him.
Say hi to Victor.
I don't have money to do it, but I'm going to try.
Uh-huh, good.
And we've been in touch ever since the first time I heard about him from you.
Well, good.
And he says, actually, I'm one of the people who wrote to him the most. And I thought I wasn't doing a good job, so I felt real good about that.
Well, I think anyone who took the time and the interest in Victor Lopez to write to him after we talked about it on the program and shared some of his emails, or not his emails, he couldn't write emails, sent him letters and so on and so forth. What can I say? I think that was a wonderful thing for people to have done.
And to have one of your listeners adopt him. My goodness.
Yeah, I know.
That's wonderful. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's
and,
cool.
You know, all the rest of the stuff that you've been talking about, which I totally agree with tonight, and almost every time I've listened to you, I've agreed with everything you've said and most things your callers have said. Let's just put it that way. Democrats, no good. Republicans, no good. just for a moment, to think of something good that happened is kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it makes me think that Clinton isn't going to get the nomination, because it doesn't make me think that. However, those polls, don't ever forget, those are corporate media polls.
Well, I understand. I do. And
I know you do.
What I mean by my saying that I've usually found them to be fairly accurate is pretty much that.
That you've actually observed them to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, bad news. But and I don't like Obama very much myself either. And I guess Edwards would be my choice. But although I've heard that his health plan is the same as Richard M. Nixon's.
Well, Nixon's wasn't all that bad.
Then it must not have been all that bad. Okay, I'm voting for John Edwards.
Well, that's good.
That's how it is.
That's good.
And I would tell you that I think he's doing better than they're telling us.
You know, like I said earlier tonight, we will for certain soon know, won't
that's
we?
That's for sure. Well, then there's the computer hacking, and that kind of trumps the whole game if they do it again.
I just hope that that sort of thing doesn't happen again. Carla, thanks. I appreciate you.
Thank
checking
you.
In. All right. Take care. Matthew is calling from North Carolina. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hey. I'm gone from San Diego to North Carolina. I'm actually about 10 miles from the John Edwards campaign headquarters in Chapel Hill, so, you know.
Who pays your travel bills?
Actually, I had to do this one from San Diego to North Carolina. So that was Christmas. I hope you had fun. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young. I did get a Lennon Legend CD for Christmas.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounded like you got that as a gift.
Yeah. And you were talking about cluster bombs. And, you know, isn't it amazing how our armies, a lot of national armies, use these wonderful weapons, cluster bombs, white phosphorus, those wonderful little chemical agents that makes water undrinkable. Mm-hmm. You know, and for them to vote, say, you know, perfectly legal, it's fine. You know, what is morality these days? I mean, aren't these people supposed to be, quote-unquote, moral and ethical and be good Christians? I mean, you know, I just think that a weapon that would spread other little devices that can be picked up and that don't immediately go off, you know, that kind of has some cruel intent.
And of course all war has cruel intent, but these, I don't know. Matthew, thanks. I got to leave it there. Thanks for checking in, pal. Be careful on your travels. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. About 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew tonight. Ian Huff is off, so thanks to Billy Foster, who engineered the program in Phoenix at our flagship station, KPHX. He also answered your calls. And thanks to Billy Foster, who's our technical director. And thanks to Billy Foster in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, and Billy Foster, the executive producer of the thanks to Chris in Minnesota. Catherine Bay, our executive producer, and Billy for doing lots of things tonight. Before you call it a night, you should go to Amy Goodman's site, democracynow.org, democracynow.org. And if you missed today's program, there's some rush transcripts up there. She had Michael Copps on, who is one of the FCC commissioners. who said today on Amy's program, quote, today's decision, referring to last week, would make George Orwell proud. And what he's talking about is that last week the FCC voted along party lines 3-2. Three Republicans said yes, two Democrats said no, to approve a measure that will increase even further media consolidation. Now, this was pushed through by FCC Chairman Republican thug Kevin Martin, and it ends a 30-year-old ban on companies seeking to own both a newspaper and television or radio station in the same city. Now, in a lot of cities, that I mean, you look at Tribune Broadcasting in Chicago or Cox Communications here in Atlanta, they own newspapers, radio stations, television stations in the same market. How that's done, I'm not sure. But maybe everything has been pending, and so they have been consolidating their media ownership over the years on a pending basis. Anyway, it's now legal and official. We have jokingly referred to the fact that someday there would be one newspaper, the Wall Street Everything, and Fox News Channel, all of it owned by this proto-fascist. What's his name? Who just bought? News corporation just bought the Wall Street Journal? And that's kind of a joke, except it's not a joke. The other thing that was on Amy's program today, an interview with a videographer with B'Tselem, the Israeli human rights group, and B'Tselem has given Palestinians video cameras to document what life is like under occupation. I sometimes worry that Americans believe that all Israelis think the same where it concerns the occupation of the Palestinian territories, and it's not true at all. There's a huge peace movement in Israel that understands, first of all, the occupation dehumanizes not just the people being occupied, but also the occupier. The occupation of another country is one of the most vile, immoral acts that a nation state can undertake, whether it is the Israelis with the Palestinians or the Americans with the Iraqis. It's a horrifying situation. It moves people from amorality to immorality. So what B'Tselem has done, members of B'Tselem have given Palestinians video cameras to document how they're treated by Israeli soldiers and the so-called settlers. According to Amy's website, Democracy Now!, some of the videos depicting abuse by settlers sparked a national debate earlier this year after they were broadcast on Israeli television. And she has an interview with Oren Yakubovich, who coordinates B'Tselem's video department. So one of the things I would strongly recommend tonight, and the name of the video program is called Shooting Back. Huh? Shooting Back. Thanks to Spitfire for sending me this link. Shooting Back. There's so much that's done by, is it not true, by the United States government and the Israeli government that is just horrifying. There's a part of me that just wants to believe, and at one time did believe, that the leadership of those two countries, Israel and the United States, were somehow moral in an immoral frame, you know, political situations, government situations. Now, this is before I understood fully how the state of Israel came into being, for that matter, how the state of the U.S. came into being. But that second part is not necessarily true. I've always known how we came into being. But Israel being a relatively young country, and it took a while for me to get my mind around how Israel was actually formed. But I still have always wanted to believe that the United States and Israel, and there are others, but especially these two nations, we're somehow had the capability or the capacity or the inclination or the desire or had been charged by history to be just, fair. And again, I'm displaying my ignorance here in not understanding how the state of Israel was formed, but still, let's stipulate that and move on. I always thought that these two countries could lead in the area of human rights and justice and dignity, respect for people. And it is heartbreaking to me to finally come to terms with the fact that that's just strictly apparently an impossibility. Oh well, how's that for a downer at the end of the program? Sorry. I'll see you tomorrow night. We're going to be here tomorrow and Friday, and then I'll be off for a week. So hope to see you tomorrow night. Okay, thanks for hanging out tonight. I appreciate it. We'll see you then. Take care. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Novem Radio Network.